The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is Wednesday. We're halfway through the week, if that's how you call it. It's Wednesday, the 11th of June. It's 4 minutes past nine, and you're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. And it's the usual mix of stuff, isn't it? We've got some interesting stories. We're going to cover all the major news items and little bits and bobs to keep you surprised along the way. Our lines are open for you to get involved in the conversation. Start your own with us here, 086 60 25000. We get new texters every day and we really appreciate it, and we love those that text on a regular basis, but it's an open family here. And if you have a view or something you want to talk about, please feel free to text 086 60 25000 or WhatsApp that number. Now, maybe, you know, you don't like typing stuff out, or you've difficulty with words. We want everyone's views to be represented, and that's why we welcome your voice notes as well. 086 60 25000, that's to WhatsApp as well. If you want to deliver your message that way, maybe it's a little bit easier. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. and if you want to watch the show, of course, live on YouTube, Facebook and on X. The front page of the Finn Valley Voice this morning, it's dominated by a picture, and the text reads, Stranola Parish turned out in force on Sunday to celebrate the Golden Jubilee of Father Kevin McAleer, or McAteer. Fan and native Father Kieran was ordained 50 years ago and served in Letterkenny, Peru, and Stranola since 1993. The Church of Mary Immaculate was filled to capacity for the Mass of Thanksgiving, and afterwards over 500 people attended a celebratory function at the Villa Rose Hotel in Ballybuffet. On to the Nationals now, and you may be familiar with the story of the shooting at Fairgreen Shopping Centre in Carlow. In and of itself, of course, it is a story that has gathered attention, but there's a interesting background to it as well, because it's emerged that Gardaí engaged in a controlled delivery of arms and ammunition to Carlow Shopping Centre shooter Evan Fitzgerald, a Dáil committee has been told. Fitzgerald, 22, who died in the shooting incident at the Fairgreen Shopping Centre, was arrested by Gardaí last year for possession of firearms and explosives. Yesterday, TDs heard a suggestion that undercover officers had met Fitzgerald before the two weapons and a quantity of ammunition were delivered. In other jurisdictions, controlled delivery can mean that weapons are supplied to suspects by undercover officers. Fitzgerald had been out on bail at the time of the shopping centre shooting. It's understood that a sum of €3,000 may have been involved in the acquisition of the guns and ammunition on the dark web. Former Labour leader Alan Kelly asked outgoing Garda Commissioner Drew Harris about the lead-up to the Carlow shooting incident during his appearance before the Justice Committee. Mr Kelly asked the provenance of the guns that the deceased young man bought off the dark web. He added, was this a controlled delivery of guns and ammunition? He also said, did undercover Gardaí engage face-to-face with this young man prior to this delivery of guns and ammunition? Commissioner Harris said, I would say that controlled delivery is very sensitive policing methodology. Right now, I haven't had an opportunity to read that full article, but I don't believe the guns that he did receive from Gardaí allegedly in that controlled delivery were the ones that he used. But obviously, it was clear he had an interest in acquiring weapons and was out on bail, even though Gardaí objected to that bail. The Irish Daily Mail, interesting blunder this. Cabinet ministers, past and present, will have to fork out as much as €30,000 after being overpaid in their pensions in a major clerical blunder. Public Expenditure Minister Jack Chambers announced a major review of pension payments yesterday for over 13,000 current and former civil servants and ministers. The minister, who labelled the errors unacceptable, briefed Cabinet yesterday on the serious and systemic operational issues in the National Shared Service Office, which provided payroll, pensions and finance management services to public bodies. In one case, a senior civil servant was overpaid by €280,000, while current and former ministers will be forced to repay amounts ranging from hundreds of euro to the low 30,000s. Mr. Chambers first alerted to the issues in March, after which further errors were discovered, including both underpayments and overpayments of pensions entitlements dating back up to 20 years. It was going on for 20 years. Astonishing stuff. How can that even happen? How could you get overpaid? Like, I'd love something like that to happen to me, but if you had to pay it back, it could be a problem. How can you get overpaid by 280,000 euro and not notice it? It would be remarkable. I mean, how long would... That's 10 years of wages to be overpaid in a pension as a minister, a former minister, and apparently not notice it. No leads on the rent control story, but certainly plenty of coverage in all the papers. The Irish Times, it'll be years before any increased housing supply brought about by rental market reform lowers the cost of renting, the coalition was told, before agreeing to overhaul the sector. Now, it's clear the even the housing minister doesn't know if this will actually work. But in the meantime, average rents may increase in the short term, according to a research paper published yesterday as the government unveiled reforms of the rental sector. I hope it's not the case, but you do wonder if we could have an increase in rents, say, I don't know, of 15%, and then they do start to drop, but actually only drop down to where we're at now or even slightly higher. And of course, that then would be seen as a success for this policy. So these are the type of stories that it's very important to keep a close eye out on, even if it's over the long term. As you would know, Cabinet agreed to extend rent pressure zones nationwide, as well as increasing tenant protection from so-called no-fault evictions. It also agreed that rents in new tenancies after next February can be reset every 6 years, with newly built apartments to be carved out from the RPZ legislation and allowed to impose higher rent increases in line with inflation. The problem this could create, though, is so say a rental property comes to market today or could have come to market today, or say, for instance, a tenant leaves today. I think landlords are going to hold on to that property. They could hoard that property until next March, because if they do so, they're able to charge the higher rents. So I wonder, could there be a short-term issue for those that are seeking rental properties now? You know, are we going to see the limited number of properties that might be available for rent now coming off the market until next March? Or maybe that's something that affects more urban areas more. I don't know. It's a complex area. And I was listening to some debate on it on the radio yesterday, and it seems that even those in the know don't really know yet what the story is. The Irish Daily Star today, scenes of violence which left 15 police injured were racist thuggery, a senior police officer has said. PSNI Assistant Chief Constable Ryan Henderson said the force would have a significant operation in place after the disturbances on Monday night in Ballymena, which many of you are following. And there's two ways to follow stuff now. You can watch the 9 o'clock news or the 6 o'clock news, or you can get the videos directly from Snapchat, X or TikTok for that matter. I think people are very much consuming this type of information in a blended way now. And younger people probably more exclusively on social media. Last night there was a second evening of disorder in the County Antrim town, while police also attended protests in Newton Abbey, Carrick and North Belfast. Riot police were deployed around the Clonavon Terrace area after hundreds of people gathered. Fireworks, metal and glass bottles were thrown at officers. A car was set on fire as part of a number of blazes started by protesters. Police fired less lethal rounds at some of those gathered and also used a water cannon to disperse the crowd. On Monday night at Clonavon Terrace, several homes had windows smashed and two suffered significant fire damage. The violence flared following an earlier peaceful protest in support of the family of a girl who was the victim of alleged sexual assault in the town at the weekend. Two 14-year-old boys appeared in court on Monday, charged with attempted rape. The charges were read to the teenagers by a Romanian interpreter. So that's really the only way the paper can get the potential, you know, background of the accused in. Now, on social media, of course, you can say whatever you like. You can accuse whatever community or individuals. You can even name them, though you might get into trouble for that. We here are much more restricted in having conversations like that. But there's A lot of anger. There is an awful lot of anger. I'm just reading this one because it's a relatively clever headline. Radio Telefish Vermin. RTE had a spate of pest problems this year with rats and mice sighted in the creche, the main canteen, the wardrobe department, and even on the Fair City set. Let me see. Do we have a creche? No. Do we have a main canteen? No. Wardrobe department? No. Do we have rats or mice? Thankfully, no. The broadcaster has faced an ongoing battle against four-legged invaders on its sprawling Dublin 4 complex with €5,400 spent on checks and inspections over the past 12 months. Last December, exterminators were called in after a reported mouse sighting in the campus creche, according to inspection logs. You can make up your own jokes. I ain't even getting involved in that. 086 60 25,000. Give us a WhatsApp or a text. Come on, get involved in the conversation. It's your show. And so we talk about, you know, housing, the housing crisis, homelessness, people struggling to get accommodation, affordable accommodation, maybe council accommodation. And it's very important too, and I don't think we do, but it's very important to remember that this is affecting real people, and real people are impacted by this on a day-to-day basis, not least here in our own county. And I'm joined on the programme now by Caroline. Caroline, thanks so much for talking to me. I do appreciate it.
Good morning, Craig.
It's good to have you on the show. Now, Caroline, you are going through the mill, aren't you? You're dealing with cancer at the moment. You had a diagnosis in September 2023.
Yeah. Good morning, Greg. Thanks very much for taking the time to speak to me this morning. You're my last hope. I've wrote down what I need to say, Greg, and I won't get emotional. I will try my very best. I've lived in private rented property since August 2018. In September 2023, I was diagnosed with lung cancer. In October 23, my partner had an accident at work and was medically unfit to return to work. Our landlord is selling the property. And for the last year, I've applied to Donegal County Council for social housing 5 times to be told over the phone yesterday that for 2 people, we are over the threshold and was told there's no point in the future to apply again as we will not be accepted on the social housing list. Despite being in contact with several councillors, we are sympathetic to my situation when telling them. None of them get back to you with any help and assistance or telling you where to try for help. So here's the thing, Greg. No income apart from a pension. No help with rent as we can't get on the social housing list. So can't avail of HAP unless you get on the list. So paying a full private rent along with household bills, food, etc. Landlord is putting our rent up in August. There's only so far a pension will stretch. And we have been told we will be getting evicted in a few months.
Okay.
Well, there are many people in a similar situation that can't get houses. Those seeking social housing are the ones that have had to demolish their homes due to MICA and can't afford to build new homes. So when I get evicted, where do I go? Donegal County Council is not going to help me. So where do I go? I have sent a medical report from St. James's Hospital, Dublin, a letter from my palliative care nurse at Donegal Hospice, a letter from my GP, and a letter from my primary care social worker. All to no avail because Donegal County Council say that none of that stands with them. I have asked Donegal County Council, when I get evicted, where do I go? They replied, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Oh, Greg, I might be wrong, but is it not part of your human basic right that everyone is entitled to a home? I have no family here. So as we can't get social housing, we'll have no option but to go to a private landlord again you will be asking for a rent beyond what we can afford. We have some savings that can pay a private rent. So what happens when the savings are gone and we can't pay rent? We will be evicted and back to the same situation I'm in at the moment. Mm-hmm. Where do I go for help, Greg? Who is going to help me? Who is willing to help me? The fact that there are no houses to rent, the situation has taken a big toll on my health. This is the 8th time in 15 years we have had to move. And as my partner worked for Donegal County Council, we could not get on the social housing list, as he was over the threshold. Mm-hmm. Those that have their own home or social housing homes are really lucky, because I will never get the opportunity to have my forever home in my lifetime. Isn't it so sad, Craig, that I'll never be able to go out and choose things for my forever home? Physically, emotionally, and mentally, I'm trying and I'm getting nowhere. Thank you, Craig.
All right, listen, take a breath there, Caroline. I'm sorry with everything that you're going through. It's a terrible situation. Obviously, you're dealing with lung cancer. Your partner's incapacitated now. In terms of being able to work, this is the problem also too with these new rent pressure zones and what have you, because the chances of you getting accommodation, new accommodation in the private sector, I would be concerned in December that you'd be able to get that, because a landlord can wait until March and potentially charge higher rents, although that might not apply here. That's probably in current rent pressure zones, but it could artificially inflate the rent in the short term. You talked about you don't meet thresholds, but with all your medical expenses that you're incurring, the fact that you can't earn, the fact that your partner is unable to work now,
and they're not interested. The council is not interested, and told me on the phone yesterday not to be applying to the council again in the future, because we won't ever get on the list.
Which is very discouraging.
How many times can you be rejected, Greg?
How is this?
You know what I mean?
How is this stress affecting the pair, you, I suppose, but you dealing, you know, with your medical situation?
Well, nobody ever wants to be told they have a cancer diagnosis, Greg. Mm. Right? And I don't think a lot of us people that are diagnosed with cancer fully accept that you have it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
And I don't think you even learn to live it. You're going through the motions every day. Mm-hmm. You know, you get up in the morning and you try to do the normal things. Yes, it takes me longer to do things now that I couldn't do before. But that's been taken away because of illness. So you're not the person you were before you were diagnosed, and you never will be. Mm-hmm. And I have been admitted a few times into Letterkenny Hospital, and each time you're admitted by 999 in the ambulance, mm-hmm. and you're going into the hospital, you're wondering, am I going to come home again? Mm-hmm. You know, and then you'd be told that your landlord's going to sell the home that you've had for almost 7 years, and you've nowhere to go, and you're trying your best to deal with your cancer diagnosis, and you're going here, there and everywhere seeking the help, and you're getting nowhere.
And as well, and I don't want to compound it, but you mentioned it as well, after the 30th of November, you don't have a home to be discharged to.
I got evicted,
And is
we're only living off a pension, Greg, and I know there's lots of people that are in similar situations that can't get homes.
Yeah.
But I'm on here this morning. I don't feel sorry for myself. I'm in a situation where I got sick, it is what it is. Mm. But where do I go, Greg? I'm speaking for other ones that's trying to get social housing as well, not just for me this morning. Where do we go to get the help, Greg? Where is the help?
Well, there's none there, according to what you've been told, that you're on your own, effectively. I mean, no. And I've heard of people, yeah, too, that have said to local authorities, you know, we're going to be homeless on a certain date, and they say, well, we can't do anything for you until you're actually homeless. You know, we can't...
I can't go on the list, so the council's not going to help me.
Yeah. But, I mean, even in terms of assisting with payments for accommodation or what have you. So you simply just can't even get on... You can't even get on the list at all. It's a desperate situation.
They're not willing. I even said to the gentleman that I spoke to on the phone yesterday at the council, I says, it might be a silly question to ask. I thought I would ask it. I says, do the council not have, like, special circumstances for people like me, a life-limiting illness, to put me in a home somewhere? Because I often wonder, Greg, where am I going to spend my last days? You know, where am I going to be?
And I mean, like, hopefully that your last days are, there's many of those, Caroline, but I presume part of you is also worried about your partner as well and what situation they might be in. But hopefully you don't have to worry about that for a long, long time, Caroline. But I can imagine you sound like the person that would also be thinking on the other person in your life, if you know what I mean. And you don't have any of your own family here, so it must feel very isolating, Caroline. You must feel very lonely at times dealing with something like this.
Very, Greg, very. But you just get up and you have to get on with it. Mm. You know, but I'm done. I'm tired trying now, Greg. My body can't take it much more.
And your only option would be to chew into that small amount of savings that you have, but that's finite. That will run out, obviously.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. When that savings is gone and we can't pay another landlord's private rent, we'll be evicted again. So I'll be back to the situation that I'm in at the minute.
Do you mind mentioning what area you're in, just in case there's someone listening? In the Ballybuffet area.
Yeah.
And do you mind mentioning your current rent at the moment?
At the moment, we are very lucky, Greg. When we moved in till August this year, our rent hasn't increased any.
Okay.
So we are very, very lucky.
But it's at a level you
and
know.
Our rent.
Yes, sorry. Go ahead, Caroline.
Sorry. Our rent at the minute is €120. So we are very lucky.
Per week, yeah.
But it's going up again in August, another €60 a week.
And obviously, post-November, I think it's probably going to go up significantly, which is...
Yep.
A big worry with all the other bills and everything. And it's expensive having cancer as well. You know, it's expensive.
And it's not just that, Greg. There's no cost of living for anybody this year either.
Mm. No, there's no helps.
So I'm sure there's many people that don't have money either and are in the same situation. Maybe, please God, they're not going through an illness.
Well, I think that's...
They're probably in this...
I think, you know, your partner's ability to work has been taken away from him, which is very, very difficult. Obviously, you're dealing with a very serious form of cancer, you know, and then dealing with the cost of living crisis and then dealing with the threat of eviction. You know, I mean, I think you need a break.
Oh, there's no threat.
Greg.
We are definitely being evicted.
But
I don't have anywhere by the 30th of November. So in the mouth of Christmas, you're going to be on the street.
Literally. All right. Caroline, as much as they will engage with us, we'll make representations to the local authority. Maybe someone listening might be able to offer some sort of, maybe even accommodation or certainly some sort of advice.
You are my last hope today, Greg.
It's a tough
after
one.
After this, I can't do no more.
It's a tough space, Caroline. I just have my fingers crossed something might come of it. But I think given all of your circumstances, I don't know, is social housing done on points or whatever it might be? But look, there is accommodation being given out all the time for people that have been seeking it less than you have. So maybe the powers that be will see this as a humanitarian case, if nothing else. Caroline, listen, stay strong. Thanks for that. I know it's not easy, and I know you're only speaking to me out of desperation.
It's a tough shout, Greg. I'm not going to lie.
Huh?
It's a tough shout. I'm not going to lie.
No, I don't. I'll be honest with you, Caroline. I'm listening, and as I'm listening to you, I'm incredibly sympathetic and listening to you, but I was also considering what capacity I would have to cope with your situation, and I don't think I could be as brave as you're being. So you're a credit to yourself and those around you, and just hopefully there'll be some good news. As you say, this is the last chance saloon.
We'll wait and see, Greg, but thanks very much for taking the time to speak with me this morning.
No, and best wishes to you and the other half, Caroline. I hope things improve for both of you very quickly. I mean, obviously, dealing with those health issues, I think a forever home or permanent accommodation would just be maybe enough to, you know, you have, as Caroline says, to buy stuff for the house, to have a place to go home to. It's a desperate, desperate situation. I do worry for all of the wealth we appear to have in this country. That's what we're being told. We don't see it, but that's what we're being told, that we would have the capacity or the scope to help someone like Caroline. Because if we can't, what's the point of it all? What is the point of it all? Okay, I'm going to take a break. We'll be back with more shortly. Now, as you would know, we've been following the story very closely of Letterkenny University Hospital being overlooked for a surgical hub. That surgical hub instead is going to be located in Sligo. We also know that the HSC had suggested to local public representatives that they'd have a review of that decision and come back and give them an update. But in the interim, the HSC regionally signed off on Sligo being the location for the hub. And that information is to be forwarded to the Health Minister. Now, believe it or not, I don't know why, the Health Minister still hasn't got the business case for Sligo. So the government haven't signed off on it. They haven't even seen it. And yet here we are talking about it as a fait accompli. Strange how the system works, isn't it? That they can presume that the government will sign off on it. But anyway, Donegal's TDs will meet with the Health Minister this evening. A meeting has been secured at 7:30, where they will, in a united voice, push the case for Letterkenny University Hospital. And we are optimistic that we might get a word with the Health Minister on the show tomorrow morning, just following that meeting. And obviously, there's a number of you know, key but respectful questions that I would like to ask the Minister to get on the record as it relates to the future of health services here for us in this region. You know, that's what it's all about. But we're going to return to housing now, and Helen's with me on the show. Helen, thanks very much for joining me. How are you keeping?
Oh, not too bad, Greg.
Helen. Right. Talk to me about your situation. It's quite a complex one, so I'll just let you tell the story.
Okay. Well, in February 2021, myself and my son, we were living in County Westmeath, and my mother, who lives in Lifford, she had a significant downturn in her health. And obviously in 2021, that was in the middle of COVID. So my mother's the youngest in her family, so all her brothers and sisters, they were all kind of, the next to her was in their mid-70s. Mm. Anyone over 70 at that stage was supposed to be not allowed to leave their house, kind of thing. And so because of my mother's health, she had to have a family member to support her close to home. And so I was living 150 miles away. So it meant basically I needed to move up. There was no one else that could have done it, you know, and no one else available. And so I contacted the Westmeath County Council, and they arranged for me to be released from my house. But I suppose in my ignorance, I assumed it was like a transfer, that I would just be transferred from one council house to a council house in Donegal. And so there was a friend of ours that lived in Killigordon, and they had a caravan on in their garden, basically on their land. And they had said that whilst we were waiting to be housed, we could stay in their caravan. Now, it was a one-bed caravan, and it was single glazed windows, and it was poorly insulated, owing to the age of it. And so it was very damp, and so much so that I ended up developing asthma whilst I was living there. The doors on the caravan were all 6 foot, and my son, who has autism and intellectual disability, he was 6 foot two. So he was constantly
basically coming, entering doors and exiting doors, he'd end up bumping his head on things. Mm-hmm. The shower was 6 foot, so he had to squat having a shower. And
at this point, Helen, were you of the view that this was temporary, that you were waiting really a council property?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. In my mind, basically, we'd be basically between weeks and months.
Mm.
Do you know, it was only going to be a short-term thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was, because at that time you couldn't actually attend the council office. It either had to be by phone or by email, or you would put a letter in their post box and then they would ring you back the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was all kind of done that way. But I was fairly confident. I mean, I was getting regular emails. I was getting regular phone calls and stuff. So I didn't think it was going to be, you know, it ended up, we were 27 months. And as I said, I developed asthma and it was having a serious impact on my son Lee.
Mm.
It was a one bedroom caravan.
It's a tight space.
So I didn't exactly. And I didn't have a bedroom, and so I'd sleep on the sofa, and he had the bedroom, and as I said, the damp as well. But we were absolutely thrilled when we were offered a house. And I must add that whilst we live in the caravan, my son has to have a sensory room. And, you know, for his vestibular system, it's the easiest way to explain it is that for my son, normal day-to-day, say, noises and sensitivities and things, you know, maybe smells or whatever, the rest of us can process and it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
My son would have heightened senses.
Mm.
And basically these things would completely not overwhelm him, but did so much so he needs to be able to.
They would aggravate him. Okay, I get you.
Yeah.
Right. And, it was a two bed bungalow in Railway Avenue. Is that the house that you were offered?
We were offered the two bed bungalow in Railway Avenue, and whilst we were in the caravan, I had a prefab added on to the caravan so Lee could have a sensory room. And so obviously when we were offered the house, and we were asked, were we interested first in September 22? And I wrote back to them, and obviously I'd sent in every occupational therapy report, every speech and language report, everything on my son, you know. And anyway, they fast forward, I'd said to them in the council that in this letter that basically my son needed the sensory room. It was basically an absolute necessity. So if it was possible, could they build on a 10-foot by 8-foot room, and that could be his sensory room? And if so, it meant we were off the housing list, and it meant that other people could move up on the housing list, you know. And so they wrote back to me in October, and it said to me that because they didn't have enough funding in the budget, they couldn't build on an extension, but they were offering the house anyway to us. And they asked that this was the Thursday of the Halloween bank holiday weekend in 2022, and they said that we had to sign, if we were accepting the house, we either had to accept it or reject it by close of business on the Tuesday. This was the Thursday we got the letter. And they said that because they weren't in a position to build on the extension, I needed a letter from either a social worker, an occupational therapist or a GP to say that it wouldn't impact on my son, that he wouldn't have a sensory room.
Mm.
So the best I could do was I got a GP appointment on the Tuesday. And so obviously I gave the GP the occupational therapy report, and the GP wrote, and I was chatting with GP. So we thought it was the best compromise that if we could have a sensory shed in the garden, and that I was going to bear the cost of, and that would house Lee's sensory equipment, and Lee could go in there. That would be like his sensory room, you know. And so the GP wrote this letter, and we went down to the council and we were there for closed business. And I was told that, or I was asked, sorry, was I going to have electricity in this shed? And I said, well, if I wasn't allowed electricity, I wouldn't. And then I was asked, well, how are you going to light it? And I said, well, I can use battery-operated lights. And then I was asked, how was I going to heat it if I wasn't allowed electricity? And I said, well, I'd probably use a portable gas heater. And then this was going back and forth. And then there was the bottom line was, I was told that the only sheds you can have in a council house are for storage purposes.
Yep. So you could have a shed and for a lawnmower, but you couldn't have one adapted for sensory purposes for your son.
Well, they said that council sheds, the people don't be in them. They just they get the things out. So I was told then that I could have a shed, but it would be a shed that they would provide for me.
Right.
And it was a tin shed, and it was 6 foot high. And I rang them up. They posted me a picture of the shed, and it was 6 foot high, and it was a tin shed. And my son is 6 foot two, so I rang up and I said, "But he won't be able to get into it." And they said, "It's for storage purposes only." Mm. And I said, "Yeah, but it's storing his equipment. How is he going to, you know, use his equipment or get his equipment?" And they had said that was the only shed I could have. So it was at that point I had said, look, the only thing we can do, obviously at that point, for our physical health and our mental health, we needed to get out of the caravan. Like, we were grateful for the caravan.
So you have moved into the house and you've had to use the bedroom that it would have been yours as a sensory room. So where are you sleeping? Where are you putting your clothes?
I have a friend of mine bought me a sofa bed. So we moved into the house in April 2023. And we got the keys to the house April 23. It was May 23 we moved in. So basically for the last 2 years, I've been sleeping on the sofa bed in the living room. The sofa bed has a bit of storage, so I can put some clothes on that. The rest I have on storage, you know, the big like Tupperware storage containers on top of my son's wardrobe. I can't hang anything up.
Of course. And those sofa beds are incredibly uncomfortable. If you don't mind, just fast forward a little bit to an OT visit, an occupational therapist visit at the end of 2024.
Yeah. So in August last year, we got an occupational therapist to come out, and the occupational therapist assessed my son and came out and assessed the house and had wrote a report and submitted it into the council and had said that my son had to have, it was imperative that as soon as possible that they either built out the extension. And she actually went out into the yard and she kind of measured out. And she said at that point, she said, even if they just, if they extend the bedroom out by 10 foot, she was saying we could kind of maybe put a, like a partition inside the room, that one part of it is his bedroom area and the other part is the sensory room. And she said if that wasn't an option, then we had to be rehoused straight away. She had said, because for my son, he's he finds it extremely difficult. He knows he is a bedroom and he finds it extremely difficult to deal with that I don't have one. And they, what you call it, even our house, the layout of it is the sitting room, kitchen is all one room.
Yeah.
So my son would often, he'd wake up in the middle of the night, he might want a little snack or he just wants to sit at the kitchen
table.
Comes
into your bedroom effectively, yeah.
Basically, yeah.
I can imagine. So you then sort of suggested that you could fund it yourself. And after that, the council did come out. It gets a bit complicated from here, just for the general listeners, because you were offered a move potentially to a house that was to be renovated, but then that house was allocated to somewhere else. And just then, now the threat of having to start reapplying. Has that passed now because you've been in this current house for a certain amount of time, do you know, given your transfer?
No, I was, when the report was done by the occupational therapist, it was just before that, it was in and around that time. Because obviously this was overwhelming my son, you know, not having a room and things like that, and so much so he'd stop, he wasn't sleeping at night time, he was in the sensory room all the time,
right?
And he can be quite vocal, and my neighbours, one of them had been in hospital, they'd been very ill, and so because the sensory room is originally a bedroom, it's basically the dividing wall is between the neighbour's bedroom and the sensory room. So basically they'd only been discharged from hospital, they were getting no rest, you can imagine, like, the equipment in my son's sensory room is a peanut ball, it's like two gym balls fused together, and he would be bouncing on that, like, you know, it'd be like 30 mile an hour bouncing on the ball.
So on top of that, that's problematic. But also, you've some concerns about the condition of the property, briefly, if you don't mind, and the impact that's having on both of your healths.
There's mold in the kitchen area, just above the kitchen unit, and there's mold now in my son's bedroom. And in fairness to the council, when I notified them of the mold, you know, they arranged for, they came out and inspected it themselves first, and then they arranged to get contractors out. Now, the first time the mold was in the kitchen, it was very bad. It was on the gable wall as well. And that was back in 2022. Mm-hmm. And 2023, sorry. And so when the contractors came out that time, and they made significant repairs to the roof on that because there was leaks. They had said that once the repairs are done, the mold will dissipate, and which it did. It just took time for the walls to dry out.
Mm-hmm.
And so this time when I notified them, and someone came out, looked at it, and then arranged for contractors to come out. And the contractors came out, and they did a lot of repairs. And they had said, you know, the same thing. Look, the leak is fixed now, so when the walls will dry out now in a few weeks. And I left it about 4 or 5 weeks, you know, and but it wasn't going away.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, I have asthma. I had I was 3 different times down to the doctors, 3 different times on antibiotics. My son, the mold in his room, he was the same, and so I contacted the council again, and this time they'd said to me the mold in my son's bedroom, they had said that it was down to poor ventilation.
Yeah,
and I said that. But we have an air vent on the window, mm-hmm. as well as an air vent on the wall. And so I was told at that point that apparently it's council property, or sorry, council policy, that the windows in a council house have to be open for a minimum of 2 hours every day.
Well, that's interesting. So your situation now is effectively, you know, you and your son could move out of this property, and then that would be available social property. You're looking for another property which is suitable to your family's needs. Have the council indicated that they're actively looking at that, or are you in a situation where you've been told, look, this is what's available, this is what you have, learn to deal with it?
I haven't been offered, with the exception of
Convoy.
The place in Convoy, because I was told that we were better off in a detached house.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I suppose
your son's
to be fair to neighbours
and what have
like
you.
That.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so we were told we'd be better off in a house like that. And I was very hopeful. I went down, had the assessment interview. We got the letter out to say that we were on the transfer list. And so as of January, basically we were told that we were back on the transfer list, and but there was no available properties at that time, and to suit our needs. So I don't know what's happening, but all I definitely know is that since February 21, I'm sleeping on the sofa.
Yeah,
I have what you call it. I have terrible asthma, and I keep getting all these chest infections. You know, this week is Family Carers Week.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Okay. And I don't know. I would just like to think that in light of this week being Family Carers Week, that we would be more kind of
looked after.
Yeah.
All right, Helen. Well, listen, we'll make representations on your behalf to the council and throw it out to the wider listenership as well to see what they have to say. Listen, best wishes, Helen, to you and your son. I do hope you do get sorted, and I do appreciate
very
your
much,
time.
Greg.
All right, Helen, let's see
thank
how
you very much,
things
brother.
Go from here. God bless. Tell that lady, this is the first lady we spoke to contact Habenteg Housing Association in Lifford. She should be able to get on their housing list, houses and apartments there. New site being built in Castlefin at the moment. Okay, I'm not sure how that works, but lots of you very, very sympathetic to both ladies, but particularly our first lady that we spoke to, who's suffering from lung cancer, and her husband can't work or her partner can't work, and they are desperate and facing eviction at the end of November.